Hi, Tim.
My sobriety date is February 10th, 2009. And my sponsor is Alfred M., who's going to be speaking tonight. My home group is the Upland Men's Stag on Tuesday night, if you're ever in the area. And February the 10th wasn't my first sobriety day. I like to talk about that because, you know, there are some of us that at times have struggled, and I was one of them. I got here in July of 89 and drank again in August of 96. And I like to share about that a little bit because, you know, the book talks about it, right? The insanity returned, and then he drank. Not I drank and then I went insane. I think I have to be insane to pick up a drink, just like the analogy of putting the hand on the hot stove. I mean, if anyone came over to my house and put their hand on my stove, I'd be like, what's wrong with you? And I'm sure people thought that about me, right? Because this program offers so much, and for me to give it back was probably mind-boggling to a lot of people that cared about me. But what led up to that is I didn't completely stop going to meetings, but I was down to one meeting a week, and I would come late or I'd leave early, and wasn't calling my sponsor, and the character defects return, and the resentments and the anger. And, you know, I mean, if you're hanging out with people that drink, I had no defense. So that was in 96, and I just told you my sobriety day, 09. So that was, you know, that was tough. Going, I think I had a year a couple times. I just kept trying, kept coming back. And I'm not exactly sure what happened in 2009, but when I look back on it, I think maybe I just had a sliver of willingness and humility enough to keep me sober a day at a time for those first 30, 60, 90, 6 months. Congratulations to all the CHIP people, by the way. And thank you for cooking food and the people that I've met. You're a very friendly group. We were here about a year ago, and that's on me. I mean, you guys have a great meeting here. But it was really, really hot when we were here last time. And then I was afraid, man, it's going to be really, really cold tonight. But, anyways, I digress. I came back. I was 47 at the time I got sober this last time. And physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, just in a rough shape. I mean, I think I had gone to 5 rehabs, and so if there's anyone out there that, you know, that has a similar experience, you know, I had a gentleman, he had almost 30 years sober when he told me, he said, Tim, just keep coming back, if you can, right? Not everyone makes it back, but just keep coming back, keep trying, and I really needed to hear that, because my thinking was, well, maybe Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't work for a guy like me, which is all BS, right? That's total BS. But the disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful, and it lies. And it got me to think that, well, this probably works for all of you, but it doesn't work for me. And because I kept going back out, you know. And I asked Alfred to be my sponsor in 99, and I got sober in 09, so that poor guy, right? I know he fired me, he just didn't tell me, and thank God he didn't, because, you know, we have a great relationship today, but I would call him from rehab. I called him from Glen Helen, county jail, and he came and visited me, and I didn't have to give him directions, so I'm wondering about that. But I guess you'll hear about that when he shares. Sorry for telling your story. But this time around, you guys, in all seriousness, Alfred and I worked the 12 steps the first year, you know, because enough is enough, right? The first year, all 12 steps. And I swear something happened. My attitude changed, you know, maybe just a little bit less selfish, a little bit less self-centered. I wanted to go to meetings. I was interested in the people that were in the meetings and what was going on with them. I was willing to take a commitment and keep it. I was the guy who would, oh, I'll do the coffee, and then 2 months later, can you do my commitment? You know, I was that guy. You know, I had to look up the word commitment in the dictionary. I'm not too smart. But anyway, so commitment and the fellowship, and about a year and a half sober, I talked to Alfred about this whole thing about sponsoring him. And because I hadn't sponsored anybody, and I had done the 12 steps. And he told me two things. He said, well, open up your heart, and if God deems it, you know, some guy will come up, maybe, and ask you to help him through the steps. And that's exactly what happened. Very shortly after that conversation, a guy came up at a men's stag meeting and asked if I would take him through the 12 steps. I've been doing that ever since. And to me, I think God knows what I need. And that's something that he put into my life and is important to me. It keeps me in the books. It keeps me, you know, right-sized, I guess. It doesn't always work out, you know. It's just a blessing, that part of the program. And then obviously commitments being of service, you know, it just, Alfred has told me what you put in is what you get out. And, you know, I knew that as a universal law of life, right? I mean, you're not going to get in shape if you don't work out. You're not going to have a good relationship with someone if you don't put an effort into it. So I knew intellectually that's true, but I really come to realize, yeah, I mean, there's promises riddled throughout that book, not just in the ninth step. And if I want those promises, I have to do the work. I finally, the light bulb went on, right? But the thing about it is my attitude changed, and now I'm willing. Here's the disclaimer. You know, I'm talking a lot of good stuff right now. But you give me 2 weeks without this program, 2 weeks of not going to meetings, 2 weeks of not talking to anyone, Tim's attitude completely changes. All the blessings that I have in my life become burdens. I don't know why I'm wired like that. I don't want to psychoanalyze it, but to thine own self be true. I know my attitude changes if I'm not plugged into this program. And maybe God made it that way. You know, he makes me, you know, restless, irritable, and discontent if I'm not plugged in. And so I stay plugged in, you know. I've already gone back out there. I've already done that whole thing, and it was brutal. I am so grateful to have made it back. I sponsor guys that have struggled, you know, because I guess they can relate to me and I can relate to them. You know, so it's a journey. When Alfred asked me, you know, do you want to, absolutely, you know, don't even need to finish the sentence. You know, I've kept the desperation, you know, of a drowning man. And, you know what? That's all I have to share tonight. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Thank God.
I'd like to introduce you, coming all the way from Upland, California, Alfred M.
All right, Alfred. My name is Alfred. I am an alcoholic.
Hello, Alfred.
I'm an alcoholic. I was here about a year ago in August, and it was about 100 degrees. And I was just the opposite, you know, and I was at this thing in Chino Hills, a banquet, and Les grabbed a hold of me and said, I phone you, and I want you to be the speaker. And in that banquet, there was a guy that shared first. He said, the thing that I hate doing is speaking. And I said, I could relate to that guy. Anyway, I always like to share how I... Okay. Wow.
All right, you're on.
I'm on now. Anyway, I always like to share how I got here. It doesn't matter how you got here. The important is that you're here now. There's all different ways you can get here. And real briefly, I got here on on May the 18th, 1976. And back then, there wasn't a whole lot of meetings. In Chino, there was only one meeting a week. Now there's over 100. And I think it was 83, 84, where in Washington, D.C., they signed papers and made alcohol and drug a disease. And before that, there wasn't any detoxes. There wasn't none of that. None of that existed. Okay. The way I got here was on a Tuesday morning. Today I can look back, and this guy saved my life. My PO, a guy named Tim Calloway. And we were sitting in a small little room, and about 3 feet apart, and this, I had never experienced this before in my life. This guy pointed his finger at me and he yelled at me. He said, I looked at your rap sheet and you're an alcoholic. Nobody had ever told me that. And he gave me another small piece of paper, say the size of a dollar bill. He said, the number in there is the number to Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, and he showed me another document. I said, I already took the time to fill it out. And if you don't show me proof today that you've been to an AA meeting, I have a court order for your arrest to go to prison. Get out of my office. But that is exactly what I needed. That's exactly what I needed. Anyway, I went home and I thought about it. Anyway, I made that phone call, and I found out later the person I was talking to was a woman. Her nickname was Clean Jean, and I told her I need to go to an AA meeting. And she said, well, where do you live? In Chino. I said, in Chino, there's only one meeting. It's on Saturday. And I told her, no, I need to go one now. Oh, you're desperate. And then she proceeded to tell me, she wanted to know where I live. I said, well, I live in Chino. That's all, you know, that's all she was going to get out of me. And then she told me, well, tell me where you live. And she did give me the location. It was in Ontario, a place called Bonita Court, on Hope Boulevard. The street on that side was San Antonio and Vine, and the street in between was called Bonita Court. And the meeting started at 12 o'clock noon. And she said, well, there's some men here that can go talk to you something about some literature, 12-step call. And I hung up the phone. I didn't want anybody coming near where I lived. I lived in Chino Navario on D Street in 11th Street. And I thought, I know this is not the way it happens. I thought a car would pull up where I live, and the car would say Alcoholics Anonymous. These people, whoever they might be, would have jackets or shirts saying AA. And the Vicarios, the Gomez, everybody would come out. Anyway, so I went to my first meeting not knowing anything. I knew nothing. I never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was back then, it was anonymous. Anyway, this is about 48 years ago. I walked in there. Back then, all the meetings were an hour and a half, and they smoked. And these people knew how to smoke. Anyway, it was about maybe 11:30 was the, and then it was a mixed meeting, men and women. I walked in there, and there was this old guy. Of course, now I'm old. I was 29 years old, this old guy. I walked in there, and he was dressed like a cowboy. And I asked him, hey, you, where do you sign up for this AA meeting? He says, you don't. And he started to walk away from me, and I said, well, how do you know you're here? He says, because we can see you. So I sat down. The guy that led my first meeting was a guy named Carmen. He shared about being locked up for the mentally insane. And they had a panel. He found out he wasn't crazy, but an alcoholic, and he got released in his own reconnaissance. Yeah, it was named Carmen, and he died with 37, 38 years sobriety. In that meeting, everything that was shared, I could identify with. It was a guy said that once he started drinking, he couldn't stop. I heard about the blackouts, get a sponsor, the big book, all this stuff. Okay, and I got my first sponsor there, a guy named Ray Contreras. My biggest mistake the first time, I was told repeatedly to get away from Chino the Barrio and that environment. I didn't do that. I thought I could maintain my sobriety, and I got drunk. And I came back, I was drinking, driving a car, and I got in a fight with the Chino police, and they won. I came back all beaten up from the inside and out. I was 30 years old, and my sponsor says, you know, this is what you need to do to maintain your sobriety. You know, you need to go on 12-step calls. You need to sponsor people. You know, you need to get involved in this program. And if you don't do this, you're not going to make it. I was willing to do that. Okay, now, I was going back in time. I was born in Bakersfield, California. Don't ask me anything about Bakersfield. I was just born there. I was born 1947, and these events were told to me. My mom and dad were both alcoholics. And another thing, back then it was a big stigma. They didn't get married. Back then it was a big stigma. Today there's no big deal, but back then it was. Anyway, 1947, and around that time, we lived around the Bakersfield area in a place called Arvin. And we lived in the middle of nowhere. It was a two-story house made out of wood. And one time I had five brothers and five sisters. It was a late Friday night. My mom and dad were someplace in Bakersfield drinking. And I don't know why this happened. The house caught on fire. Why it caught on fire, I have no idea. Two brothers and a sister were burned alive. You know. Okay, they tracked down my mom and dad. You know, I guess the police were there, and you know, whoever, with the paramedics. And when they got there, they had the tarps over the bodies. And it was told to me, my mom and dad told the people that were there, well, it seems like everything's under control, so they went back to the bar. And what I've learned, if you're an alcoholic, your addiction comes first. Nothing else matters. It should, but it doesn't. Okay, then a little bit after that, my mom was, well, again, I don't know if she did or didn't. She had another addiction. Anyway, she went to the store to get some milk and cereal, and she saw this guy, and she took off with him. So we never got the milk and cereal. And then my father, I don't blame him for doing this, he put us in an orphanage and someplace in Bakersfield, and his mom and dad didn't like that. So they got us out of there, so I grew up in Chino in 1948, something like that. I grew up in Chino. And at that time, Chino was segregated. The street, Riverside Drive, was that side. And I went to a segregated school. And when I went to school, I couldn't speak English. I spent 2 years in the first grade. I didn't understand the vowels and the consonants and everything. And then another thing, my aunts and uncles didn't like the fact that their parents had taken us in, me and my sister. They resented the fact. So when we used to go to their house, we had to stay outside. We weren't allowed to go inside. It didn't matter what the weather was. So, and I started drinking. I was 7 or 8 years old. I started drinking wine. My grandfather used to work in construction, and he used to buy this big gallons of wine for, I guess, 50 cents. So I started drinking wine. Somebody asked me, why did you drink wine? Because it was there. Anyway, fast forward, as it progressed, when I was maybe 16 years old, I was driving a car on D Street in Chino, and I had been drinking, and I got pulled over by the cops in Chino, 1963, and I got arrested. I spent 35 days locked up. You know, I hear people saying that back then they didn't do it. Well, where I live, they did. And I remember being locked up in the Chino jail, and people were saying, well, is anybody going to get you out? No. My grandparents told me and my sister, that if we ever got in trouble, the law, figure it out for yourself. And fast forward, it's called tough love. So from that point all the way up, even in sobriety at age 29, I went to a lot of drunk tanks. Some of them are not there, but I remember in Ontario, there's a place on Mountain Avenue next to the 10 Freeway, West Valley Detention. Some are in a Waterman, LA, the Glass House, all those different places I was locked up. And I was also locked up in camps, went to prison twice. And so when I come here, the person you see today is not the person that I came here. The second time I was 30 years old, and people put their hands out to me. People put their hands out to me. When I got here the second time, when I had about a week or two, I was sitting in a meeting, and this guy came up to me and nudged me and gave me a little roll of $14. And I told him, I don't know when I can pay you back. He said, I don't want you to pay me back. When you see somebody else that looks like you, you give him $14. You know, and I was willing to get involved. Different times of my sobriety. My first meeting was at a place called Auckland Span Recovery. I did time in sobriety. I was in Glen Helen, this other place, and somebody took me to this place and this meeting. I had about a year, maybe a year or two months, and they had elections for new secretary. And they nominated me, and I said, I cannot be the secretary. And somebody says, why? I'm not a good example. I got drunk. I was locked up. Anyway, make a long story. They told me to go outside. I don't remember if there was two or three of us. I went outside, and then they said, come back in, and I got it. I got that commitment. And I had that commitment for 2 years. And back then, the secretary did everything. You had to get there early, make the coffee, be the treasurer, set up everything. And I had that. And then a lot of people, it wasn't very a popular meeting. It was a recovery place for men and women. So I asked my sponsor, can I ask people that have been sober a long time? Yeah. He said, the worst thing they can tell you, no. So I asked different people like John Kay, Alberta. I even asked Chuck C. They all came. And before you know it, it was standing room only in that meeting. At different times of my sobriety, I became a GSR, DCM. I was voted to be in the Glendorum, the panel there. I was there for 2 years. I've done retreats. You know, you get involved in this program. What I'm always told, you get involved, and the people that get involved stay sober. You know, for me is different things that happened to me. When I had 7 years sobriety, I got custody of my father, somebody that I didn't know because he didn't raise me. My grandparents raised me. I had 7 years sobriety, and I got to know this person. And when I had 14 years sobriety. He was in Chino Hospital, and I was presented with these documents, and the only thing that was keeping him alive was all these machines. So I signed documents, take my father off life support system, and I could do that because I was sober. And then my sister that we grew up together, around this time, she was diagnosed with throat cancer. And we were super close and everything. It's going to be 18 years ago. And I was the one that called the ambulance. I was the one that went to the hospital. And then she was in hospice, and she had two sons, and they couldn't do it. And I was the one that took over. Then when she died, I did the funeral. Because I was sober, I could do that for my sister, you know. And then when I had about 20 years sobriety, I have a condo in Upland. That sucker caught on fire, you know. And now it's been rebuilt and everything. And then I went to a men's stag, and I was sitting there, and they said, let's call on Alfred. He always got something nice to say. And the topic was, and I'm not making this up, is your house in order? And I said, no, it just burned down. And everybody burst out laughing. You know, in some of the places that I was locked up, I was able to go in there. There's a place, it's not there no more. It used to be in Chino Youth Authority. I had a panel in there for 5 years. And then the other side is the men's prison. I went there with a guy named Bruce. You know, and some of these different things, and we talk about amends, and my sponsor told me, I want you to make an appointment with the Chino police and meet once a month, and I want you to make amends to them. So I met with the Chino police, and I told them that I was an alcoholic and had been sober, and I'm here to make amends to me. And they had never experienced that. And I told them, you know, when I got arrested, I wasn't very nice. And this is the things that I was told to do. And then another thing that my sponsor told me to do is, anybody else in your amends list? I said, yeah, I had an aunt. Well, I had and some uncles that, well, this particular aunt, what I wanted to do was burn the house with her in it because she wouldn't let us to go inside the house. So when I told my sponsor, I don't know where she lives, he said, well, I didn't ask her to go look for her. Anyway, when her mother died, which was my grandmother, she was there, and I said, I need to talk to you. We went outside, and I told her, it was your house. If you didn't want to let us in, you know, I accept that. And this resentment that I had against her disappeared. You know, I was willing to do this. You know, all these different things, I was willing to do these things. You know, and for me is that what I was told by my first sponsor, Ray Contreras, what you put in is what you get out. You know, there's a saying that my grandparents said, did you go to school or did you pass by? You know, so, you know, when Les asked me to be here, you know, I was at this thing over there in Chino Hills, the men's banquet. You know, my first thought is, I don't want to go over there. But, you know, God tells you what you need, you know. And then where I live, my nephew lives with me, Christopher. He was married to this girl, this woman named Betsy. And all of a sudden, 3 or 4 years ago, she did not want to be married anywhere to him. And she took off to South Carolina. And then her daughter didn't want to go with her. And she took her cat with her, you know. So, and then her daughter, Alexandra, told me, is it okay if I live here? I haven't got any money. I said, yeah. And I think in June or July, she's going to graduate from the Upland High School, you know. And she's been an honor student for 3 years. And she got straight A's. And because of that, the school offered her, if she went to Chaffey College, they would pay for her books and the registration. Only because, you know. So you're sober, you can help other people. See what you can do. And God has put different men in front of me to help. I didn't go out, you know, when I used to work, my last job was at Albertson, and there was this one kid named Matt, and I pulled him aside. I said, I know you're drinking, it's not, you could tell me, mind my own business. And I said, I told him I was an alcoholic. And I told them where the meetings are at. Well, fast forward, when I was in Montclair, and I was in front of Target, he came out and he says, Alfred, I want to thank you. I've been sober now 5 years, and I'm going to get married. Wow. And then in my early sobriety, when I was in Glen Helen, you know, I was sober, but I was in Glen Helen, I did 6 months. I was doing straight time. Then it was this. I sat down on a Saturday, and this white kid, I think I was 31, 32. This white kid looked like he was 25, 26 years old, sat next to me, and he started crying. And I said to him, what's wrong with you? And he said, I mean, I've been doing weekends for 2.5 years. My wife drops me off Friday, picks me up Sunday. And I have 4 kids. And I drink. And I told him, why don't you do something about it? He said, I don't know what to do. I said, there's a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. And there was a library there. So we went over there. I told him, where do you live? It's like, and I said, you know, where you live, there's an AA meeting there. So the following Friday, he said, Alfred, I went to that meeting. And I haven't drank for 5 days. So God has put people in front of me. You know, and it's up to me to put my hand onto them. You know, I always enjoy when they do chapter 3. Now, in a lot of meetings, they can't do that because it's only an hour meeting. But, you know, everything that was said there. Okay, going back to my mother, this was told to me, 1952, 51. She took off with this guy, and they were out drinking in the Bakersfield area. And I'm pretty sure they were having sex. This guy told my mother, all that stuff that I promised you, I'm not going to give you nothing. I don't know if you know what a resentment is. Anyway, she got a resentment towards this guy. And she went to the, this guy had dragged more than my mother. She went to the car, grabbed this thing, it's called a machete. It's a big knife. And what she did was wrong. But this is what happened. She attacked this, it's called mayhem. She attacked this guy. Anyway, they got her, and she was given 20 years in prison. And she started her prison in Tehachapi. And I think it was 51, 52. And in 1954, they had an earthquake in Tehachapi. And about a fourth of the women got killed, some injured. And they made a new prison between Chino and Corona. And she did the rest of the sentence there. You know, and when I was 21 years old, I went to visit her. And I was waiting in the lobby, and somebody said, I don't think she's going to come out. And this woman came out, nothing against this woman. And she said, I need to read this thing. Delfina Ramirez Mendoza respects the fact you were born. I want you to get out here and never come back. She had a bad attitude. You know, but that's what happened. Okay, and then she finally came out, and then she went to, I don't know if it's still there, there was a place in Pomona called Latterman. And she went there to try the word rehabilitation. She was there for a year or two, then she went up north to Sacramento with one of her daughters. When I had about maybe, I don't know, 2 or 3 years sobriety, I was at my sister's house, and she was on the phone, and he says, who are you talking to? Our mother. Would you like to talk to her? Sure. I told her, I'll drop everything and see what I can do to help you. Her last words to me, I want to be left alone. And then about 6 months later, my sister called me over that our mother, south of Sacramento, there's a place called Golf. So I guess it's a city. She went to a bar 6 o'clock in the morning, and at 3 o'clock, right there where she had the bar, she died. You know, when they read that chapter, some people take it to the gates of insanity or death. She was one of those persons, you know, and she just didn't want it. But, you know, and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is for those who want it, not for those who need it. And then another thing that's hard for an alcoholic is criticism. There was a guy named Big Mook back, came up to me and says, Alfred, you got a good line, but you need to not curse or swear. Because we you know. And then he told me, you need to stop dressing like a gangster. And you need not to mad dog people. You know. In other words, I wasn't very friendly. You know, and you know, I was willing to accept that. People were willing to help me. And that woman, Clean Jean, she helped me with your bandit issues. You know, that she, and I was telling my nephew today, you know, some people have asked me, you must have hated your mother. No, she must have had her reasons. And and I was told, the only person I can change is Alfred. The only person I can help. And my first sponsor taught me, when you go to a meeting, don't act like a clown, don't act like an idiot, be presentable. You know, and everything I have today is because of this program. If you're wondering how old I am, on May the 10th, I'll be 77. My sobriety date is 1/25/78. I'll be sober. I'm sober 46 years. Yeah. I'm the only one in my family that's in this program. You know, I would like to see, as much as I know, I would like to see other people in my family, but they don't want it. When I was locked up the second time in sobriety in Glen Helen, there were 7 guys there from Chino. And we were talking, and I said, would you like to, I can look you up later on and bring you to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. At the same time, all 7 of them said, Chile. which means no way. Yeah. And one by one, they all died. Rudy Purchase, Colbert, all these different. They don't want it. You know, which is, you know, I don't put anybody down. But, you know, if you're here for the first time, I welcome you. If you've been here more than once, I welcome you. Because my favorite saying, it takes what it takes. If you can stay sober from day one, I think that's great. But there's people that struggle. You know, and I think it was, I could be wrong, 1984, they made all these drug programs, detoxes, you know. And somebody asked me, if somebody can go there and get help, and it doesn't matter how many times, if you can go there and get help, that's great. I was telling somebody a few days ago, I live in Upland, and they have this recovery center in Upland. It's over there on Foothill and Mountain. And that was on the ballot, and I voted yes, so they could have that thing in Upland, you know. I don't get any percentages, you know. Somebody can walk in there and get the message. That's what it's about. You know, that's what it's about, you know. I owe everything to this program. And I used to hear things like gratitude. I said, ooh. And today I'm grateful. I'm grateful for this program. You know, I have a lot of friends. If I don't go to meetings, people call me up and says, is there something wrong with you? You know, and anyway, for me, is that I'm glad that Les got a hold of me over there in that banquet, you know. I guess God wanted me here. God, you know. So if you're new to the program, you know, get a sponsor. Listen to that. I was at a meeting in Upland called The Meeting Place, and I was asked to lead the meeting. I picked the topic, willing to follow direction. If you're willing to do that, whatever you're going through turns around. When I got here, I had this big giant mound this high of stuff, and my sponsor told me, if you don't drink or use and go to the things, this thing slowly come down. But if you don't, it just keeps getting higher and higher. You know, when I got here the second time, I was real skinny. My skin color was between a yellow and an orange. And it's been a long time since I had to be fingerprinted, had handcuffs, wear the orange or whatever you're supposed to wear. You know, I'm going to end it with this. Is that there's a place over there. It's not there no more, but it used to be on Mountain Avenue between the 10 freeway on that side. It used to be called West Valley Detention. It was a late Friday night. There was a bunch of drunks, including Alfred, long time ago in my 20s. And one guard told the other guard, we don't have enough men to process all these drunks. And one guard told the other guard, why don't we get Alfred to help us? You know, I got to remember that. If you forget where you came from or whatever thing, you're going to get drunk again. And I haven't forgotten. You know, people ask me, you know. The question I get, I find this really strange. The question I get asked the most is, how old are you? I get amazed by that. People want to hold, I guess what they're taking a series or something. I don't know. But I don't mind it. Another thing, now they say, let's hear from that old Mexican. And somebody says, does that offend you? I said, well, number one, I am old and I am a Mexican. You know, let it go. Let it go. You know, let it go, you know. Don't be, you know. Anyway, I don't know if I said anything that you could identify with not, but I want to take Les for asking me to share here again. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's give that Alfred and Tim a hand for a great meeting. I'm Les Alcoholic, and I want to thank everybody that comes and be of service here. We need a lot of help cleaning up after the meeting. And if you want to get involved in this meeting, come see Fernando or me or Tina. We got a lot of openings here. So I'm your Grapevine rep, meeting in a print. I just want to say one more thing. The H&I meeting's on Monday at the 502. What time, Tina?
The first Monday.
First Monday, what time?
6:15.
if we want to get involved in H&I, I mean, that is so good. I mean, when I got here, you know, they used to tell me, hey, kid, get in the car. And I said, where are we going? Just get in the car. You know? And I had to follow directions. But you know what? That's the best thing that ever happened, you know? I'm telling you, we went to places you never, ever dreamed of. Anyway, this is Meeting in a Print. And what we do here is we give them away. You read it, bring it back, and we recirculate it. Drop it off at a recovery house. Drop it off at the police station. Or send some to the prisons, you know, 2 years or $58. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff in these books. I like them because, you know, if you get stuck on stupid and you're in your car, you can pull over and read something. And you know, it's amazing how your perceptions will change, you know. So anyway, this one here is a pretty good one. It's Young and Sober. And they came to AA and found their crew, got into service, and joined in. It's never too early to stop drinking. Anybody want it? Come on up and get it.
Thank you guys for being here. It really is a group.
You're welcome.
Group effort.
Bad numbers.
There you go. Thank you.
All right. Tony Alcoholic. Promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. Now, after a moment of silence for the alcoholic that still suffers in and out of these rooms and parks, the innocent children caught in a crossfire, please join me in the Lord's Prayer. Whose Father?
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not in temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thy is kingdom, power, and glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Next Friday, I'll be taking a 2-year cake for being 2 years cake girl. That's right. Not sobriety cake. Yeah.